Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and Superdeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Joining us now is Mitch Light of The Athletic, covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you for joining us, as you do every single week. Now, I do call it Georgia fatigue, if you will. Call me a hater. I don't think Georgia's the best team in the country. What say you?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I got to ask Caroline, how are you doing? I realize it's Tuesday. There's been several days removed from the game. I'm not on Monday.
Okay.
You guys. I'm just checking on your welcome.
Mitch, you have done a great job of setting the table because at 1:15, we are going to recap Caroline's Saturday night. So set the stage for us, Caroline. You're LSU grad, watching the game with whom?
All Ole Miss grads.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Brutal.
And Caroline, correct me if I'm wrong here. This is one of those rivalries that means a lot more to Ole Miss fans. They think probably, and this goes back to the 50s and 60s, it was a true rivalry. But I'm guessing you, the LSU fan, doesn't quite have the same respect for Ole Miss that Ole Miss fans would like you. Is this correct? Am I correct in the dynamic?
Of course not. What? I mean, Ole Miss has beaten LSU, I think, twice in the last 10 years, like this, and the last time Ole Miss beat LSU was that horrendous 2021 LSU team when Coach O got fired, and it's the same kind of thing with Arkansas. Like Arkansas plays LSU, and that's their biggest rivalry. And we look at it, and it's like, yeah, let me just flick you like a little annoying gnat that we have to get past on our schedule before we get to Alabama. So no, I don't have the same respect for Ole Miss that Ole Miss has for LSU. And to answer your question, I am not doing okay, but thank you for asking.
There's a lot of smoke coming out of the ears right now in our studio.
As Willie knows, I'm a really nice guy. And I just worry about people, and I'm just checking on you. So, okay.
Thank you for checking in. I'll move on. I'm miserable, but I'll be okay. And I'm going to the Missouri game this weekend, so wish me luck.
You should not tie your emotions to a sports result, Caroline. You have so much more going for you than that. There's more to life.
What else? What else do I have going for me? All I have is LSU football.
Okay. I will answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
Is Georgia the top team?
I don't know. I mean, that's the beauty of college football. It's one thing that's fun about college football. It's like, you know, I guess the NFL is the same thing, like especially in the Titans divisions, everyone's 2-2. Someone looks terrible one week, great the next week. But like when you're like Notre Dame's halfway through its season already, and they might not be the best example because they've already played several Power Five teams. But when you've played 4 and 5 games, most of these teams haven't even played more than one Power Five team or two, and maybe not have played a road game yet. So we don't know. I mean, credit Georgia for finding ways to win. But if you are, you know, college football is not just a math contest. It's a beauty contest because you need to impress voters. You need to impress committee members. So if you did not know Georgia won the last two national championships and you were just kind of dropped on the face of the earth and watched college football, you'd probably say Texas is the best team in the country. They've played, you know, Kansas was without starting quarterback, Jalen Daniels, but they sluggish first half. Played great in the second half, ran all over them. They've obviously won at Alabama. So if I had to pick right now, I would say Texas is the best team in the country.
I was thinking either Texas or Florida State. Most impressive resumes, biggest wins have looked like the most complete
beating
teams.
LSU doesn't make you a good team, by the way.
Well, clearly not. Because, I mean, I'll behave.
I'm trying to, you know, okay. Well, you know, Florida State, you know, the win over BC on the road, again, one of those, give them credit for surviving, played, don't want to diminish anything about going on the road and beating Clemson, but they, you know, Clemson probably was the better team for most of that game. So I really feel if Texas played Florida State right now, I don't know what the boys in Vegas would say. I'd feel confident picking Texas.
How good is Tennessee?
Don't know yet, because that's one of those. They're sort of like the Titans, maybe. Like, I mean, they're better than the Titans relative to the entire landscape. But like, I was on a show yesterday in a new weekly in College Station, Texas, and like, how do you judge Tennessee after the Florida Kentucky game? And I know every game has its own identity, and Florida has played relatively well at home and been a nightmare on the road. But how good can you say Tennessee is when they looked so poor at Florida? It wasn't like they lost. I mean, it ended up being closer, but like, they got dominated for the most part in that game, and then Florida has been looked awful on the road there. So they're clearly not, you know, we've gone over this, they're clearly not as explosive as they've been. You know, one of my favorite stats is the yards per play. You know, that offense looked pretty good against South Carolina. They averaged 6.6 yards per play. For the season last year, Tennessee, which was an all-time great offense, averaged 7.3 yards, I believe. So clearly the offense isn't as good. Losing Brew McCoy, they're not as deep a wide receiver there. So again, we're going to find out a lot more about Tennessee and all these teams over the next 3 months. 3 weeks. I think they're a solid top 15 team. I don't know if they're any better than that right now.
Now, Mitch, look at what I'm glad you brought up the Florida and UK game. UK routed them, rushed for over 300 yards, it seemed. Ray Davis, the Vanderbilt transfer. Vandy wish they had him on their team right now, but I don't know if it'd make a difference because that offensive line isn't as good. But you look at what they've been able to do the first five games of the season. It hasn't been a who's who of teams that they played, but they did beat a Florida team that just mollywopped Tennessee a few weeks ago. What is this UK team? Is it what we've seen in previous years where they start off pretty good and then end up falling once their schedule gets tough? Or are they better than that this year?
Yeah, that's a good question because, you can say what you want about Florida, but they dominated that game. And, credit Ray Davis. He was incredible. You mentioned the offensive line. He had huge holes to run through, but he also made guys miss, and he would bring tacklers for extra yards. So that was an all-time great performance. Obviously Liam Cohn's return, a lot's been made of that. How he's the offensive coordinator 2 years ago, he's back. Like, if you would have told me Kentucky was 5-0, I'd say, okay, Devin Leary's probably having a monster season, throwing the ball all over the place. Well, he hasn't been great this year. He's probably been a little bit of a disappointment. It's been the running game and the defense. And the Vanderbilt game, they put up a big number, but they kind of messed around in that game. They got off to a big lead, and if Vanderbilt did not, if A.J. Swan didn't throw some really bad passes, Vanderbilt could, they were down 11 points and driving in the third quarter. They won the game comfortably. The ultimate test this week against Georgia, and Seth Emerson, our Georgia writer at The Athletic, I was reading his story the other day. He kind of phrased this perfectly. He said, Kentucky is always – Georgia is a bad matchup for Kentucky, not just because Georgia is one of the best teams in the country. They play similar styles, and Georgia always has better players. And that's it's a big reason why Georgia wins a lot of games. But when you're trying to upset someone, maybe you want a little different style. So, I don't know how much there is to that. But I think this Kentucky team is very good, Derek, but there's nothing to say it won't be like similar years. When they get to the teeth of the schedule, they might stumble a little bit. But there's nothing wrong with that for Kentucky football to win 8, 9, 10 games. This would obviously they have a chance for a program-altering win this week. I don't think they'll get it, but they've got to have a ton of confidence right now.
Now, quickly before I pass this over to Willie, can Caleb Williams win a national championship at SC? I know people say, well, they took their foot off the gas pedal last week, and I think maybe they did because they were up so big. But that defense isn't good.
Yeah, it's disappointing to me, too. Not that I'm a USC fan or anything, but I work with Antonio Morales, our USC writer, a lot. And they upgraded the talent. Like, last year, their talent wasn't very good. This year, they upgraded through the transfer portal. They should be better. I saw this stat. Someone tweeted this out yesterday, and kind of defending Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator, a little bit. Once USC got the 21-point lead in the second half, their pass to run ratio, I don't remember the numbers, but it was 20 pass to 8 runs. Point was Lincoln Riley didn't exactly do them any favors, burning some clock. But right now, it's very fair to say they have a national championship offense and a defense that is good but not great. And the problem with them this year, the Pac-12 is a lot better. So I don't know if they can win the Pac-12 with that defense. But again, I wouldn't be shocked if they got better because their personnel is better.
Speaking of that, Mitch, it's interesting. The Pac-12 is very intriguing, especially with what's going on in the future. I mean, what is the future? But Michael Penix is another guy. Like, I haven't watched him play a whole lot, but man,
he's great.
Puts amazing numbers every week. So can he get into this discussion, serious discussion for a Heisman?
Yeah, in fact, we do it every week, a Heisman straw poll. It's running, our second one was running today. And we've got 35 people in it. A lot of people who vote in it, like myself, are actually Heisman voters. So our straw poll is usually pretty good. And Penix was number one last week, the first week, and Williams was two. Williams is one this week, Penix is two. He's fantastic, throws as good a deep ball as I've seen in college football in recent years. Plays in a great system. Like, I don't know, this didn't get a ton of national attention, maybe, but Ryan Grubb, their offensive coordinator, Alabama, like, tried to hire him away. It wasn't like, oh, they just talked to him. They tried to hire him away. He goes back with their head coach, Kalen DeBoer, for a while, so he stayed there. They've got big-time wide receivers in Jalen McMillan and Rome Odunze, two really good future NFL players. So they are legit on offense. Now, they kind of did not – first road game last week at Arizona did not play great. It was, but again, it was the first time away from home. So they have to play USC. They have to play Oregon. I think the Oregon game's in 2 weeks. So we'll find out a lot more about that offense. Well, that team. We know their offense is good in a couple of weeks.
Give us your thought on Alabama at Texas A&M. A really intriguing game. A&M beat them last year. Alabama looks like they're moving in the right direction here. But what do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. In fact, I told you I was on the radio show in College Station yesterday and kind of made me make a pick, and I picked A&M. I liked this A&M team in the preseason. I was the in our top 25, we all vote for the athletic top 25. I had them the highest. I had them the top 10 in the preseason. I know there's nothing really that says in the past few years that they deserve that, but they have a ton of talent. I thought Bobby Petrino coming in would kind of write that offense. You know, the Miami game was a debacle. It got away from them. But other than that, they played pretty well. Max Johnson, it's nice to have a solid backup quarterback like that. They've got some total dudes on the defensive line there. So, I know Alabama made some strides offensively, and Jalen Milroe played a lot better. But I think the spread's only like 2.5 or 3. I think I'd pick Texas A&M to win that one.
Yep, Bama by 2.5. And so is Johnson in there, or is their quarterback coming back?
Wigman's out for the season.
Connor Wegman's out for the year. He's out for the year.
So Johnson is the guy.
Johnson's the guy.
Yeah, and in this era, it's you know, Vanderbilt's kind of seeing with Ken Seals too. It's rare to have a backup quarterback that has legit SEC conference starts wherever you are. Not a lot of teams have that. So credit, you know, for A&M for keeping Max Johnson around there. So he's played well since he's been inserted into the lineup.
Yeah, especially in an era where it's hard to keep around just one starting quarterback, much less two
chairs.
Starting
exactly.
Quarterbacks. Last one from me, Mitch. I mean, like, there are so many teams that I could go down in college football of. How good is Tennessee? I don't really know. How good is Kentucky? I don't really know. How good is Georgia? Honestly, I don't really know. Is this the least amount that we know, like the most in the dark that we've felt about college football in a long time? Like, I'm getting 2007 flashbacks.
Yeah, no, I agree. And my colleague Ari Wasserman wrote a column about this. He's like, first time that I can, you know, ever remember being in October and not being able to identify, okay, our national champion is going to come from like these three teams. Like, I think there's 9-10 teams that are good enough to win a national championship. And I think it's fun that way. I mean, it is, it's kind of what we want. You know, some people like the dominant programs, and we, you know, Alabama's still a dominant program. Georgia and all that until someone knocks them off. But I think it's great for college football to have this debate. I think it's fun that Texas is having a great year and everyone keeps downing him. They keep winning. So, yeah, we all enjoy every college football season because we love the sport. But I think this one's been really fun so far.
I think it's good for the sport. I think that everyone has fatigue of Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, you know, your repeat offenders. It's nice to have a little bit of parity. Mitch Light, appreciate you for joining us. As always, we'll chat next week.
All right. Take care, guys. See ya.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Hey, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5-106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach, will join us in 15 minutes. A little quarterback switch up. A.J. Swan out with an injury this past week, so we will get Clark Lee's thoughts on that situation, quarterback situation moving forward. But looking at this past weekend in college football, we just chatted with Mitch Light of The Athletic. And I feel like every single week in college football, I step away saying the exact same thing, which is, I don't really know how good this team is. Like, I don't really know who the best team is. I don't really know what this team is because Florida comes out 1 week against Tennessee, you know, limits Tennessee to less than 100 yards rushing, and then comes out against Kentucky, and Kentucky runs the football all over them. I don't really know what they are. I think I know one thing for certain, though. LSU's defense sucks.
All right, so this is what we need to do because D-Mace and I, our teams aren't doing very well. We're going to talk to Coach Lee at 1:30. They get to go to the Swamp this Ooh. Weekend, the team that they beat last year in Nashville. Mm-hmm. But they're obviously struggling, right? Mm-hmm. Michigan State?
Struggling. Iowa team that couldn't score against, I don't know, Hillsboro High, Pearl Cone, managed to score 26 points against the Spartans. I mean.
Iowa is the kings of winning right. games like 7-3.
Yeah.
So none of us are really happy with our alma maters, but so sometimes misery loves company. So we want to hear.
Well, I'm so glad that I can keep you company, yes. Willie.
So I want to hear about the Saturday because I'm watching that game. I'm flipping around. And it was an unreal. If you didn't have a dog in the hunt, right? It's back and forth. I look at Lane
did
Kiffin,
have a dog in the hunt.
But for me, like I'm just watching it pure entertainment. I'm thinking to myself, what is Caroline going through right now? I almost wanted to text you and say, are you breathing? How's the heart rate? I remember Lane Kiffin's frazzled hair with the visor at the beginning of the fourth quarter. You know, they do the weird interview. You can never get anything out of it, but it was funny. He goes, you know, the question was, are you going to get back in? He goes, we cannot stop them. Mm-hmm. We have some serious matchup problems. So basically what he's saying is we have to score every time we get the ball. And they pretty much did.
Yeah,
so they did. So set the scene for what you were doing. You were watching with Ole Miss people.
Yes. So, well, you know, I went to workout class Saturday morning, and she was like, come on, like, get that heart rate up. This is going to be the highest your heart rate is all day. And I was like, sister, we play Ole Miss tonight. Like, it's not going to be the highest my heart rate is today. So a majority of my friends in Nashville, they all went to Ole Miss, all Ole Miss grads. And, you know, they're football fans, but, like, you know, this, you know, football is everything to me. And it's like, hey, if we win, cool. If we lose, you know, whatever. So I'm sitting there and I'm trying to play it cool because everyone's kind of like nonchalant about the game. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I have to excuse myself. I walk away from the table to go watch the rest of the game, like in the fourth quarter when things really are a shootout. And I'm looking at it like, look, this is going to be the last team that score or the last team that has the football wins. And I found myself throughout the game like, okay, just Ole Miss has the ball, hurry up and score so we can get the ball back so we can hurry up and score and then you can get the ball back. It was a true, you know, ping pong back and forth. But it was just true, true misery watching that football game knowing that this LSU football program has been built on elite defenses. That's what LSU is known for. Mm-hmm. It's DBU. It's Tre'Davious White and Tyrann Mathieu and Devin White and Grant Delpit and some of the greatest.
Stingley Jr.
Derek Stingley Jr. Some of the greatest defensive players in the history of college football have come through LSU, and you are now the 120th ranked defense in all of college football. Gave up over 700 yards of offense to Ole Miss. Over 1,300 yards of offense in that game, by the way. It was just
389 passing, 317 running for Ole Miss.
The worst part about it is LSU missed 34 tackles. 34 tackles on Saturday night.
Good Lord.
Accounted for 288 yards of Ole Miss's offense. So over half of Ole Miss's offense came off of LSU missed tackles. If LSU just makes half of those tackles that they missed, they win that football game.
Oh, we're doing the Oklahoma drill.
That's the most frustrating thing about it is, you know, and LSU has good players. Mm. I mean, LSU has three future first-round picks on the defensive line, and they couldn't record a sack against a team that got sacked four times against Tulane. Just, it was so bad.
So you're saying your Ole Miss friends, though, weren't like so hardcore that they really rubbed it in on you?
No. And what made it a little bit better. It was like, to them, it was like, woohoo, we won the game. So that made it a little bit better that I wasn't around, you know, people who are as diehard Ole Miss fans as I might be as an LSU fan. So that made it at least a little bit easier. For some reason, Tennessee fans rubbed it in my face a lot more than Ole Miss fans did.
So they have Missouri next?
LSU has Missouri this weekend.
So Missouri was just here, right? Mm-hmm. Missouri, I have to say, now they're sitting there 5-0. So Vanderbilt has been throttled 2 weeks in a row now. To Kentucky and Missouri, it's demoralizing because in Vanderbilt's fans' minds, you're thinking maybe you got a shot at one of these, right? Going into the season.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those teams are 5-0, and they look good, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just against Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
We saw what Kentucky did to Florida there. So what do you think? LSU, Missouri, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's going to be a much more interesting game than I ever anticipated.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Their receivers, big, strong, very
Missouri
very
has some really good receivers. Their defense isn't – now, their defense isn't like something you call home to mama about.
No.
I think their defense is okay, but they're going to have to score a lot of points.
Definitely.
Missouri's going to have to score a lot of points.
And
they can. But Vanderbilt helped them this past weekend as well. So, you know, I think that will be a good game. Will it be another one of these high-scoring games? Maybe, maybe not.
I think it will be because, you know,
but
I
it's like
at
a must-win for LSU, right? Yeah. They need
This is a must-win. You lose to Missouri. Sorry to any Missouri fans out there.
And Missouri's ranked in the top 25. So is Kentucky. So it's weird. Like, are they going to stay in the top 25? It's like you were asking Mitch, like, how good is everybody? It's hard to know right now.
And that's what I think is the difficult part about this point in college football is there's no scheduling consistency where, you know, Kentucky plays four non-conference games and then Vanderbilt to start the season, whereas, let's say, Alabama played Texas and Ole Miss to start the season. So there's no scheduling consistencies, so it's really easy to maybe overvalue or undervalue certain teams that have either, you know, weighted their schedules in the beginning or in the latter half of the season. Missouri's a good football team. Missouri can put up some points. I think they're 18th in passing offense in the country, but also I look at LSU. LSU is an elite offense. Like, there have been a lot of comparisons made to the 2019 team, and that's not something that I really take lightly. Mm-hmm. But it's the best wide receiver duo at LSU since Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. It's the best running back we've had since Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the 2019 team. And Jaden Daniels' stats have been eerily similar to Joe Burrow's stats. And the passing touchdowns are obviously not nearly as high, and Jaden Daniels runs the ball a lot more.
He could really run. Mm-hmm.
But this is statistically the best offense in the Southeastern Conference. So if you lose to Missouri, you are wasting the best offense that you've had since you won a national championship and had the best season in the history of college football, and that's the biggest shame to me. You've got a good team, you've got talented players, and you're just being mismanaged on the defensive side of the football.
Yeah, that's the problem. They don't have the defense to match the offense that, you know, they are putting out on the field. Even, you know, during the Joe Burrow and Chase and Jefferson and Days and Zelaire, they had a good defense that could match what their offense was doing. This is where I think, you know, you will start to, you know, separate, you know, conferences. You know, the conferences will start to separate themselves, you know, from one another.
Yeah.
And within the conference, they're going to start separating themselves from teams. Like, you look at Kentucky and Missouri. Both of them are 5-0. Well, Kentucky's about to run into the gauntlet of their schedule, you know. So we're going to see what type of team Kentucky are. We're going to see what type of team.
At Georgia Saturday night.
Yeah, we're going to see what type of team Missouri is. And for that matter, I think across college football, now they're getting into their scheduling. Mm-hmm. They're getting into conference play, you know, whether it's SC having to play Washington or Utah or Oregon.
Texas, Oklahoma this weekend.
We're going to see how good these teams are because, you know, yes, in prior years we said, well, Georgia is unquestionably the best team in the country after 4 weeks, or Alabama is unquestionably the best team, or Ohio State. This year, we can't say that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can say, on one hand, we can say Michigan's the best team. On the other hand, say Ohio State, Georgia. You know, Texas, USC, Oregon, we don't know quite who's the best team. But as the week starts to go, because now we're getting to conference play, we're going to see who the best team is.
And look, I think there's still a very realistic possibility where Georgia could win the national championship.
Yeah.
I guess there's a very realistic possibility where Alabama wins the SEC West, even with all the issues that they have. But even if that's the case, the process to getting there has been a whole lot more fun than maybe it has been in the past.
It almost helps.
Joyless murder ball.
Yeah, it almost helps that the SEC lost a few of those non-conference games because it really, from a national perspective, has you thinking, all right, is the Pac-12, do they really have maybe some playoff contenders out there? Or is Texas a real national championship contender? It looks like the table is set for a real fun October, November.
Didn't help my heart rate, nor my my level of happiness. But hey,
okay, we'll be checking in. We'll be checking in on you on Saturday morning.
Yeah, I might need it. Yeah.
Just remember,
I very much
Caroline,
so might need it.
It's about the memories and friends made along
the way. It is true. That is true. I may have lost some friends on Saturday night.
Okay, yeah. You didn't need them anyway.
Yeah, that's right. 615-737-1025. Clark Lee will join us coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays, 1025, 1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville. App joining us now is Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. Clark, appreciate you for joining us. A.J. Swan out this past weekend with an injury. So what's the plan moving forward at the quarterback position?
Well, A.J. was available for the game. He wasn't able to complete the week of practice. And right now we feel like there's got to be a level of training that's going on offense where we're building chemistry and really, preparing to play together on Saturday. And so, you know, we're just monitoring his health day to day and ultimately, you know, feel like we have two guys that we can lean on. And I thought Ken responded really well to the task of running the offense on Saturday. Wasn't perfect, but we can draw from that performance. We'll see how AJ bounces back and how he's able to practice this week and kind of make those decisions as the game nears. I mean, they're both preparing to start and, we're going to give it some time to see how it all works out.
Clark Lee is with us, and we've been saying, you know, for at least being in a fortunate position that not a lot of schools have, especially in the SEC, is having two starting caliber quarterbacks on the roster. But on the road this weekend at Florida, and, you know, the Swamp is obviously a very notorious place to play, tough place to play. What are you doing this week to get your guys ready for an environment like the Swamp?
Yeah, we have noise at practice, and obviously we'll have mechanisms in place that'll allow us to navigate, you know, if we're not able to communicate verbally, but certainly something that we're going to prepare for. Obviously, we have to also focus on just our performance and the things that we don't want to change so dramatically that we're not, building on the positives that we've seen in the last couple of weeks. And yet we know that it's going to be a factor and we're going to need to be ready. So, when you have a connected team and a team that's playing with chemistry, the noise, we seem to handle the noise a little bit better. That's going to be our primary focus, just building into that chemistry this week. And obviously we're going to interject some of those, noise elements as we look to function on offense and in the punt game as the week goes on.
Now, Coach, you guys went out there and, you know, the first quarter of that Missouri game, it was a back and forth. It seemed like not many points scored. Even in the second quarter, it wasn't until sort of like the end of the second and the third quarter where Missouri opened it up. And it, you know, a lot of it we can say it was some of what you guys were doing that were giving them an opportunity to get up. But there were a lot of missed tackles. And I know I can sit here and say, Coach, you know, these guys, what are you doing in practice to alleviate the missed tackles? But is that more so just a fundamental thing, or is it a paying attention to detail thing in regards to tackling?
Well, there's four. Sorry, man. This, you know how a coach is. Mm-hmm. You don't forget those things. There are four that stand out to me mm-hmm. as fundamental technical issues. Brian Longwell had a couple where in the flat, when you're pursuing the ball inside out on the line, you're always in a vice, even if you're in a vice with the sideline. And so there comes a point where the ball is squared up to the field where you have to also square up and start taking two types of spaces, right? Not just lateral space, but actually climbing vertically to the intersect point, if that makes sense. Otherwise, what happens is the ball steps inside you. Mm-hmm. Some of that's just exposure and learning. Obviously, we train those things and we drill them, but they have to show up for us to count in the game. There were two there. John House had a really tough one right before the half where he had a spatial tackle, but he was in great position. You know, he's got to run his feet. We have to stop leaving our feet as we're going like below the knee to tackle, because the skill we're playing against is too good to do that. If you can take the engine away by putting your shoulder through the thigh and running your feet and wrapping the legs. And I think you got to down the ball there. We didn't do that. And he kind of like got into an awkward position where he tried to hip toss the guy, and he lost the tackle. And then the fourth was on Langston Patterson. It was again another example of, you know, when the ball squares up, I've got to get off a horizontal line and start climbing vertically inside out. But he was in a bad position because he like, to your point, it's a detail thing. The back motioned out. That was his man. He was late seeing it, so he was chasing the play down. And I feel like a lot of the space, you know, that we ran into on Saturday was a product of us not executing and not being on the same page defensively. So sometimes you don't know from the sideline, just because it feels like they're finding all the windows, and they certainly did a good job, but there was so much within our control there that we didn't capture, because, you know, we had guys that weren't in the right call. The call wasn't communicated the right way on the field. And I don't see that as a player issue. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's, you know, an organizational issue where, you know, how are we teaching? How are we learning? And how well are we addressing those things so that, we're in position. Alignment and assignment are things that we do. And that way, you know, you're taking away unnecessary space. So I think there were a number of factors into you know, how we kind of bled out yards. That middle stretch of the game, to me, that you're alluding to, where they were able to separate, it was also a perfect storm of, you know, I think we really hit a lull and had four straight possessions that were punts. I think there was a total of 14 plays in that stretch. And then the fifth possession was the interception in the end zone. And so it was yeah, I think it was a tough point in the game to fall out of sync. Mm-hmm. So not only were we, you know, not executing at the level that we wanted to defensively, we also were playing more snaps than we'd like to. And again, that's not a formula for us to win a game.
Now, every coach wants to be a balanced team, unless, you know, you're unbalanced and you're winning, whether it be passing or throwing. We saw Kentucky rush for almost 300 yards, and they only threw the ball a few times and they ended up winning the game. How do you become more of a balanced team? Because you're doing well through the air. Ken Seals came in and did a pretty good job, but it's where you're suffering is the run game. You're not able to mirror the run game with what you're doing from a passing standpoint.
Yeah, that's the challenge, right? I think Missouri was a good front. We struggled against them a year ago to establish a run, and we were a kind of a pretty good, you know, top end rushing team. And so I think their challenges they present playing man free and loading the box up. But there were also some runs there, you know, I felt like we were not synced up in the offensive line early on. I think there were a couple of times on Saturday where, you know, they were able to win one-on-ones and get into the backfield. But on the whole, I felt that unit played better. I think some of it has to do with pressing the ball at the running back position and vision for the cut, you know, and creating the run based off what's available. I did think we found some room on the perimeter in the jet sweep game. And, you know, the other answer to that, Derek, is, you know, we using rhythm and timing passing game to get us on schedule, you know, that those things can become like runs for us if that's the way we need to move the ball. The biggest thing to me is we can't go first and 10, second and nine, mm-hmm. you know, third and nine. You know, that's not a recipe for us to maintain possession. And this is still about point limitation for us. So we have to be able to control the game through possessing the ball, and that means playing better on third down, which means you have to have a good first and second down approach. And we have to take the approach that, you know, if we can't generate the run, then we need to find ways to do this by getting the ball in the air.
Talking to Clark Lee, head football coach for Vanderbilt. And so, Clark, one of the things that is going on, you got a lot of young guys that are playing. One guy that I'd love to hear you discuss a little more is Cedric Alexander, true freshman in the running back position. As Derek mentioned, the ground game is a little work in progress right now, but I really was impressed with him as a pass catcher last week.
He was really good as a pass catcher, and, you know, I think things that get me excited, you know, he was exceptional blocking on the perimeter. And, you know, he led on a jet sweep that kind of set the tone for our first scoring drive. Quincy Skinner had a crack block, and Seti led up on the DB and really threw a nice block to create space for us to get a first down. And then there was a three-play sequence later where we ran the ball, then hit Will on a shallow cross. And again, Seti, who was running a route out of the backfield, leads up on the corner and gets Will some catch and run space. Really impressive, savvy for a freshman to do that. The next snap was the touchdown pass to Junior Sherrill. So he's doing the little things, and small things done well has been a mantra of our program this season. I mean, I think, you know, the runs will be there. You know, as we get synced up, we continue to coach through some of the struggles there. This is a kid that's building a complete game and really doing some nice things, as you mentioned, as a pass catcher too. And that bodes well, you know, for his place in our offense and also his career. I mean, I think he's on his way to having a really nice career, and it's been fun to have him out there and to see all the recruiting, you know, visions coming to fruition.
I noticed you got some young corners that are playing. Some guys are banged up, and it seems like you're in a dilemma of, do we play way off and try to come up and tackle and try to force a mistake along the way, or do we pressure a little bit and risk getting beat deep? And a little bit of both has happened. There were some key plays where if you get a big stop on the third down, maybe you stay right in there and have a chance. How do you try to work with those guys? Because I would imagine confidence is a big part of the equation here too, to try to keep them up, even though you face some really good receivers here.
Yeah, you know, we had they had four touchdown passes in the game. One of those came on a 2nd and 20 explosive where they got behind us. And ultimately, you know, we have to find a way to get we were in a split safety defense. There was only two routes on the play. And we have to find a way to get somebody freed up to close the middle of the field. We weren't able to do it on that snap. The rest of the touchdown passes came on third down, third downs in the red zone. So, I bring that up just to say, you know, for us to build to the stop, two of those were thrown on a safety in coverage, and to me, you know, though when you're growing corners up on the field in the SEC, obviously those guys are literally on an island out there, and there's going to be tough moments, but I think there's some positives to build on as well, and so. Again, for us, you know, you mentioned, you know, playing off and giving space versus pressuring and pressing and the ball getting over top of us. There is a balance there where you're playing off and you're playing with great vision and you're taking time and space on the throw. We can't, when we're off, chase the ball to the flat. You know, we have to be able to react to the throw before the ball's thrown, and then within that, you know, we have to be able to cap the double move with our body so that we're driving the route and the receiver's got to run through us if he's running a double move. And then when we are pressed, you know, the pressures have to get home, but there's fundamental technical aspects that we got to sharpen up to play with the confidence that you speak of. And so we try to just train those guys to have short memories, to be positive and encouraging. And I think there's been improvement. I mean, we're playing against better people. We've seen less interference calls. Now, you know, some of that is, you know, we need to be in positions to contest throws down the field, but also think that they're getting more comfortable playing the ball late. And I thought Trudell Berry made on the first field goal they kicked, he made a nice stop on third down on a one-on-one fade and zero coverage. And so, There are signs there. We're growing young players up in the program. We have to be patient with them. We have to encourage them. And we have to continue to coach and teach them, because, unfortunately, it doesn't get easier. I mean, we're going to continue to have a really good skill that we're playing against, and we have to support those guys the best we can during the week, and then on Saturday calling them into success too.
Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach. Clark, appreciate your time. Safe travels to Gainesville this weekend.
Thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
All right. Thanks, Clark. Appreciate it. Willie, how much do you as a Vanderbilt fan think about how Vanderbilt was able to beat this Florida team last year? I know it's a year-to-year, week-to-week kind of league, but obviously there's no gimmies on any SEC schedule.
Yeah, I mean, those were great wins.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. You know, you couple the Vanderbilt win over Florida and then Kentucky. And, you know, I've talked to a lot. I've been to all the games so far. I've been talking to a lot of Vanderbilt fans about where they are mm-hmm. right now. They clearly, you know, they'd love to have another win or two there. There's disappointment with where they are, right? It's almost like those two wins put them ahead of schedule. And I see them playing a lot of young players. We were just talking about the corners.
Mm-hmm.
True fresh. We got a freshman, sophomore, and they're getting torched, right? They're having struggles, right, containing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of their most talented players are freshmen, sophomores. And they're having growing pains, right? They have trouble staying healthy. They're having ups and downs. I feel like if they can get through the fire, and I see those guys as juniors and seniors, I see a very good team. Like, I remember Zach Stacy as a freshman under Bobby Johnson, you know, and they had Wesley Tate as well, another local kid, had all kinds of trouble as freshman sophomore, struggled big time. Lo and behold, a couple years later, James Franklin comes in. Those guys are juniors and seniors, and they were equipped to start winning. Jordan Matthews kind of the same way. So Clark Lee didn't have that nucleus of older guys that he came in with. So it's almost like, maybe in retrospect, that was a little bit of a tease winning those two games last year for where they are as a whole. They just got to get more experience. They got to get more layers of talent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's disappointing, but you know, they've got. I'm curious to see how they grow with a lot of these young guys. Swan is a great example. As a sophomore, I mean, he's been very up and down. It's almost as like I heard Clark Lee almost say, "Okay, he could have played." But let's stop the train for a second. Let's gather ourselves. Let's take a little time, take a breath. And then maybe when we see him again, he'll be better equipped to take a step forward. But there's no more great example than your success or failure than quarterback in this league, right? You got to have your quarterback playing well.
And success is not linear in this league. You're not guaranteed anything. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. So postseason baseball starts tonight, and I have a postseason baseball thought, and we will get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 1025, 1063, the game. DraftKings Sports and Social, the most epic sports watching experience in town, is opening downtown on 2nd Avenue this Thursday, and Stillman & Company will be broadcasting live on location from 2 to 6 p.m. DraftKings Sports and Social features a massive state-of-the-art 33-foot LED screen, the world-famous menu, and signature curated cocktails. That is this Thursday, the grand opening of DraftKings Sports and Social downtown on 2nd Avenue. So postseason baseball starts in just about 15 minutes. Rangers, Rays, opening up the wild card round of the postseason. And I have one thought going into postseason baseball. And now, before I say this, let me couch that by saying I understand how difficult it is to win in the postseason. I understand that it is a long road throughout the postseason to eventually get to the World Series and then winning the World Series. I understand how freaking difficult it is that the World Series trophy might be close to the most difficult trophy to win in sports. Stanley Cup might just, you know, edge him out there. But I get it. I understand how hard it is to win in postseason baseball. But I believe that anything short of winning the World Series will be a disappointment for this Atlanta Braves team. That, you know, everything that they have done throughout the postseason, they have the best record in baseball. They have the best pitcher in baseball in Spencer Strider. I mean, they have at least one Brave at the top of almost every single statistical category and batting and pitching in Major League Baseball. I mean, you've got Ronald Acuna, you've got Matt Olson, you've got Austin Riley, who are unstoppable at the plate and nearly unstoppable defensively. I don't think there's any excuse for this team to not win the World Series, and I think Braves fans have every right to be incredibly disappointed anything short of a championship this year.
You know, it's an interesting thing to throw out there because as you say that, I think back to the mid to late 90s mm-hmm. when they had Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz. And they were there every year.
98.
And you could say, now 98, you had the Yankees who were unbelievable. That was mm-hmm. the Yankee dynasty, right? So in there, you know, they lost to the Yankees a couple times. In 96, I think they were better than the Yankees.
Was that the Padres year?
The Padres' year was 98.
Okay.
Yeah, and
okay.
they beat the Braves in the LCS. So there were, you could have said this about pick a year in
totally
other than 95 when they won it. Mm-hmm. You could have said, hey, the Braves had the best team, mm-hmm. and they didn't win it. Since they have added that extra layer of playoffs, right, it is tough to win even if you have the best team. Last year is a great example. The Phillies were not a good team until about 3 weeks ago in the season, and they get in, and they just caught fire.
We've seen it so
happened
many times
a bunch of times.
Worst to first kind of teams. Last team into the playoffs, and then they just catch fire at the right time. Totally, 100%.
The Padres were very underachieving until the last month, and then they got it right. Mm-hmm. They got in. They beat the Mets two out of three, a team that went 99-63 or whatever. So all that to say, this is what you would say about any sport, right? The best team doesn't always win, and baseball is now like that where you have the three tiers of playoffs. But I'm really excited. And look, this Braves team doesn't have Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz, okay? They got Spencer Strider, very young pitcher. Can he carry them for three rounds of a playoff? We'll find out. He's got the talent to do it, but he's young. He hasn't been through it. Max Fried has been unavailable for a lot of the year. He's clutch. He is a true number two. Is he Glavin, Maddox, or Smoltz?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find out. But they, and then beyond that, they got a lot of question marks in their pitching staff. So they have the best team. They have been unbelievable to watch. They're a machine. But it's hard to say you're just going to slug your way through three rounds. But so I think you've hit the storyline. This is, mm-hmm. at least in our area of the country here, will the best team go on and win? Because you got a great opportunity. The Dodgers have got – you think the Braves have pitching injury issues? The Dodgers are decimated mm-hmm. with that. So this is a great year to beat them. You know they're going to be in there every year. So you just – are they going to be able to find their way through? Great stuff.
Exactly.
Right now they're just sitting back and watching who's going to win these other – games here.
Right, and which is a nice place to be in, especially when you're a team that is, you know, dealing with injury. But still, hey, it was that good of a season, I think, for the Braves. So the Braves
unreal.
Look so unstoppable.
Their lineup
is
This is the best lineup they've ever had, I think. And we're talking about Chipper Jones and Fred McGriff and teams like that. This lineup I would take over those teams.
Got to win the World Series. Anything short of
you
it
put that
will
out
be
there.
A disappointment.
Okay.
And I stand by it. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman and Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.